Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot brought to you Me'eretz HaKodesh is daf Chof Dalet, and we are holding at the Halakha Mishnah. Mitzvah begadol liyabem v'im kadama katan zacha. So the mitzvah lechatchila is that the oldest one of the brothers who survives is the one who should be miyabem. As we'll see later on, if he doesn't want to, we start going down. We go to the brother that is younger than him. If he doesn't want to, younger. Until finally, when we get to the youngest of the brothers, if that brother doesn't want to be miyabem, then we'll go back to the oldest brother, the oldest surviving brother, and we will tell him, sorry, sir, but we don't have any alternatives who want to be miyabem. And the Torah wants you to be the one who's going to be miyabem, lechatchila, and since there's nobody to take your place, you're either going to be miyabem or we're going to force you to be miyabem. But the bottom line is, we're going to be chazer back to the goral. So where do we get this from? Tana Rabbanan, v'haya ha-bechor. So let's think about the pasuk in the Torah and see how unusual it is. We have a pasuk, and we define this pasuk in ways that seem to be totally different than the simple meaning of the pasuk. Listen to the pasuk and tell me what you think it means. V'haya ha-bechor asher teled yakum al shem achiv hamet v'lo yimache shemo miYisrael. So the bechor who is to be born, what do you mean a bechor who is to be born? Where is there a bechor? That doesn't make any sense, does it? I mean, this woman has, we're not talking about her bechor, are we? I mean, we've never talked about her being important, whether this is her first marriage, second marriage, whether she's got 50 other kids. I mean, why would it be a bechor? It's not the bechor of the brother that is doing the yibum. So I guess, all right, v'haya bechor asher teled means the first child. So we're using bechor in a loose way, maybe. That child should be the one who is taking the name of the deceased brother. So then this would be what? This would be a message to the Yavam. You have a brother who is deceased. I mean, it can't be talking to the Bechor because it's not his brother. It would be maybe Aviv, but or Achi Aviv, if the Yavam is meant to be his father, and then we would just say his uncle. V'lo yimache shmo miYisrael, and therefore, by calling him the name, what does that mean? Yakum Hashem Achiv HaMes, whatever the name was of the deceased brother, shall be given to the child. So that way everybody remembers Joe died, but this is Joe Jr., even though it's not really Joe Jr. because it's his brother's child. But nonetheless, because we're calling him Joe, it'll be a memory for his brother. Okay, that's a simple way of reading the pasuk. Now, the way the Gemara is reading the pasuk, and we're going to analyze why later. It says va'yah ha-bechor, that means ha-bechor asher teled is referring to two completely different things. V'hayah ha-bechor. So what we're talking about over here first is we're talking about the mitzvah of the yibum. So ulekachalo le'isha v'yibma, that was the closing of the previous pasuk. And then we go on to say, and now that he was the yibma, so now v'haya bechor, meaning the one who did the yibum, shall be the bechor. So we're putting it together. L'kacholo li'isha v'yibma v'haya bechor. That's the one that should be miyabim. So it's not referring to the child, and we'll see later why we say such a thing, but instead it's referring to the one who does the yibum. That's how we're learning it. And then when it says asher teled, who? Asher teled who? Asher Teled is coming to tell me, not since we're not referring to the child that will be born. Clean your lens, Gavi. The child that will be born, so it's got to be referring to the V'yibma. So the V'yibma v'ya b'chor, and the V'yibma of a woman, Asher Teled, who has to be able to have a child. So that comes to tell me that the Ilonit is not included in, as we saw, in the mitzvah of Yibum. We had a lot of discussion of this before, because she cannot be asher teled, she'in yoleda. Then when it says, yakum al shem achiv, so now that it's referring to not the child that will be born, but to the yavam who does the yibum, what would it mean that he is taking the place of his brother? In what sense? In the sense of the nachala. he will be taking the place of the brother in terms of the inheritance of the family. So either that means, as Rashi and the Rambam learn, either that means that when his father, that is the grandfather here, dies, then the brother who was deceased also gets a chelek, right? But who gets that chelek? The one who gets the chelek is his, only his Yavam brother. Normally his chelek would have gone to the other brothers. Maybe there's five brothers, but in this case, he takes the place of his deceased brother and he gets his own nachala from his father and he gets the brother's nachala from his father. That's how Rashi and the Rambam learn. Others learn that it means that he gets the brother's entire haum. That, in other words, normally if a brother dies, the normal Seder HaYerusha is that it goes up to the previous generation, that is, the father of all of these brothers, and then it goes down to be split between the brothers. But in this case, it will not be split, it will go entirely to that brother. But that doesn't mean that when the father ultimately dies, that the father's, who now leaves over $1 million, that was part of what came in later, it doesn't mean that that will be given to the Yavam, that chelek. Okay, as I say, the Rashi and the Rambam is the way we've been learning the sugya. So it's referring to nachala. Well, I don't understand, like, what right you have to do this. You're saying it's for a nachala. Maybe it means what it says. Maybe it means that the child should be called by the name, whatever the name was. If the name of the deceased was Yosef, then the name of the child should be Yosef, no? So if he's called Yosef, Korino to Yosef. If the brother was called Yochanan, Korino to Yochanan. No, no, no. Because look at the words of the pasuk. Yakum al shem achiv hamet, right? What does al shem mean? Well, does al shem mean to give him a name, or does al-shem mean nachala? I'll show you the pasuk. Yaakov Avinu tells his son Yosef, the other children that will be born to you will be Yakum al-shem acheyem. Yikar'u b'nachalatam. What an amazing pasuk. So Menashe and Ephraim, they are given a status of Shvatim and they get a Yerusha. And the others will be called al-shem for nach. What do you mean al-shem? We don't call all of the brothers, Menashe 2, Ephraim 4. It's crazy. Obviously, it says beferish in the pasuk. They will be called members of Menashe and Ephraim in the sense that they will get the Yerusha Sa'aretz through Menashe and Ephraim, right? Okay. So then if that's the case, the same thing is true over here. Al-shem means al-shem nachala. So that's very clear. Look, we already saw how the entire issue is built around nachala, built around the children of Yaakov, and built around whatever Achim Yachtov, that has to do with Achim and Ha'av, because that's part of the concept of nachala and so on. So all of that is so consistent with what the pasuk is saying now. Therefore, when you look at it from that point of view, it actually makes so much sense. What we're talking about is not about names. We're talking about names in the sense of the ultimate name, which is the continued identity of a particular structure of information that we call ourselves and that which brought ourselves into being and that which continues after ourselves. So it's referring to Nachalatam. Ma Shema Amur Lahalan, Nachala, Av Shema Amur Kan is Nachala. And then it says, V'lo yimacheshmo, that too is coming to tell me a din in the Yavam. So that means to say, when do you do this Yibum? Only in the case where we have a father that would have a possibility of a shame, but a sterile brother never really was part of a shame, because we just defined what that shame means. That shame means the continued genetic connection to that structure of information. But a Soris is, by definition, without that shame. He doesn't have that continued presence. So what would be the point of the Yibum? So Prat v'Soris, whose shame is Machui anyway. That's the point. Beautiful. But the thing is this, says Rava, you know, Normally, when we have two levels of understanding a pasuk, we have the drasha, which comes from the deeper reality of the pasuk in its various levels of structure, which we've just shown over here that we need to understand it that way because of the overall way that the Torah utilizes those words and the gzera shava of what the meaning is of shame in this sense. Normally, we would say, ein mikra yotzei midei pshuto. Now, that was a very, and remember, we had this before in Yavamis, because this is a very important yisod in the, what we called the Yibum Sugya of mimetics as opposed to genetics. So we came to understand all of the various levels of the way that a pasuk has different descendants, so to speak. And we have these different rules of combination DNA. And therefore, one of them is that ein mikra yotzei midei pshuto. But in this case, there is no such halacha. In other words, normally we would have said, okay, I understand everything you said is true. The Bechor refers to the oldest brother. But, I mean, it also is saying, as a naive reader would read, it's saying that the child that is born should be given the name of the mace. You're not going to ignore that, are you? Says Rava, yes, you are. In this case, the Gzera Shava of Yakum al Shem comes to actually remove it from the pshat entirely. And Hocha Atoy Gzera Shava Afikte mi Pashtele Gamre, and there is not even an inyan of being Kere al Shem Hames on that level. And some of the Mefarshim say beautifully that the reason that the pasuk is constructed this way, because normally, remember, the multi-leveled idea of structure in the Torah has to support a continuum of the same idea going from one level to the next. So even though I understand that there's a higher level of shame that refers to an ultimate shame that goes back, in a sense, to Adam Arishon, and it's the Sifra Shel Adam Arishon, it's a continued genetic development from the concept of the species itself, and that would have been mechayev both levels. Why do you understand, therefore, that it's even appropriate that the Torah should have expressed it in this way when it did not have a level of kiyum in that reality at all? Why wouldn't there be? So they explain that in this case, we're going to see there's contradictions to utilizing the simple pshat. And the reason that the Torah put it in this fashion is brilliantly, I think it's Rav Avram Ben-Ahara who says this, but brilliantly, the Torah wants to bring out the original idea of Yibum. So in other words, in the same way that the Ramban explains the earlier relationship to Yibum in terms of the simple meaning, give the mace a place, and therefore any continuum of genes is good, and it's not a din only in Ach, and therefore we have the story of the Benot Lot, and we have the story of Tamar, and so on and so forth. It puts it in that way to show that ultimately that was what Yibum was always about, and now we have sort of pushed it into a stricter explanation in which the Bechor would refer to the Yavam, and it's not really a din of Kriyat Shem, it's really only a higher function, and therefore we're limiting it now in this new way, which I think is a very nice insight. Anyway, so the Gemara wants to point out now that even if it hadn't been for the Gezer Shava that was Afikte Legamre, so how exactly are we going to, let's take a look at how exactly we understand this pasuk. By the way, I should tell you a very important halacha, which is that the Rambam holds that in a case where we have two levels of pshat and drosha, like we just had here, that this Ramban uses actually this Gemara as a question on the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvahs. The Rambam says that things that are learnt out against the pshat of a pasuk are called divrei sofrim, and therefore, by definition, they are not included in the minyan hamitzvahs. The minyan hamitzvahs is meant to follow the pshat of the pasuk. So the Ramban points out, and how about this Gemara that we're learning now? It doesn't say the ein mikra ela kepshuta. That's not the point. It says that Ein Mikra Yotzei from the Pshuta, which is Mashma, that the Medrash is actually the real thing and that it flows together with the Pshat. And therefore, the Pasuk has to include both meanings. That's, he brings as part of his overall arguments against the Rambam. And, but this is very meaningful because it, people think that when the Rambam uses the word Divrei Seferim, he means Dirabbanan. And he does not mean Dirabbanan, ever. When the Rambam says Kedushin Kesev is Divrei Seferim, I mean, that's outrageous. There's so many psukim. I mean, what do you mean it's Dirabbanan? And what, the woman's not really married? And if somebody would sleep with that woman, he wouldn't be chayev because it's only Dirabbanan. I mean, people don't understand what he's saying. He's saying that even though the pirush of this thing is Divrei Seferim, it's not the direct expression of what the Torah said, but this is included in the way that the Torah gives the mitzvah. El Roi, is there any way for you to avoid that bright light behind you? Because it sort of blocks you out. A little bit over. Okay, good. That's much better. Okay, so to continue now. Says the Gemara, now that we're saying this new pshat, you're saying the meaning of the pasuk is the oldest of the brothers. So maybe the idea over here is, instead of saying that it doesn't have any meaning at all in terms of the pshat, why can't we understand this to mean actually what it's saying? Why can't we say that the issue over here is in fact about a bechor? Okay? But what it's telling me is the seder of the yibum. So you're telling me that the pasuk is talking about the, not bechor, but the oldest. But maybe what it would mean is like this, and that is the bechor should be miyabim. You're right, it's talking about the yavam. I'm ready to say that. It's not talking about the child. Okay, but why do you say it means the oldest? Why can't it mean the bechor? So in other words, if the oldest, meaning the firstborn of the brothers, is still alive, then the firstborn has the responsibility of the continued development of the family, and therefore he should be the one to be miyabim. If the firstborn in the family has died, so then when another brother dies, there's nobody to do yibum because it's only a din in bechor. How do you know it doesn't mean that? That's what it says. Even if you've changed it to mean the yavam, it still is saying the bechor should be the yavam, not the oldest. But pashut, if he's only a pashut, he shouldn't be miyabe. The answer to that is brilliant. Because then why do I need a pasuk to tell me Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo? The Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo is by definition younger than the Bechor, since he was only born at the end of this whole story, and he's brother number 20. So what do I need a pasuk for? He's not the Bechor. So if you're telling me that he cannot be Miyabim, what you're saying is if it wouldn't be for that, he would be Miyabim. So obviously, it can't be a din of Bechor Mamish, because im kein Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo Dimiyat Rachman Olamali. What a wonderful insight into the development of the pasuk. Okay, says Rav Acha. Okay, I got it. But let me stretch it a little bit. Are you quite sure that the idea of Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo was maybe talking about a bechor, not the bechor from the father? Maybe he's a bechor to his mother, you know? So it's saying a bechor in the family, even if it's from the mother, He should take responsibility. So maybe you have five bechors in the family. So if he's even a bechor and to his mother who was born after the death of his father, that then you would think he would be miyabim kamash malan. He is not miyabim. Maybe that's what it means. So that it's still true that it would have to be a bechor. Nah, says the Gemara, come on. Ahula matzit amrit. I mean, first of all, look. The whole sugya is defined by nachala, correct? And especially right now, Rashi understood. Right now, we just explained to you that the meaning of Yakum al Shem Achiv Amet is in terms of nachala, like Menashe v'Ephraim, right? The other brothers will Yakum b'nachalatam, specifically. So it's all within in nachala. And Nachala is only interested in paternity. It's not interested in maternity. And therefore, why would I have thought that a mother's bechor should take the responsibility of the family of the brothers? That's weird. No, come on. I'm not. So if it can't mean the bechor, and it can't mean that there's no yibum if there is no bechor, because of the idea we just learned that, eshetachim shlo abim b'lamo. So forget it. It simply means the oldest brother. Okay, wait a minute. Not necessarily. Let me explain it to you. Look, I could still say that Bechor is literally Bechor. And when you come along and now you're saying, okay, but haven't we shown you that there's younger? Yes, you have. You have. And I agree. That the idea of Eshet Achav Shelo Yehi Be'olamo absolutely proves the fact that younger brothers, if they're not Shelo Yehi Be'olamo, younger brothers definitely do the Yibum. But maybe the meaning of Ayah Bechor is to tell me, when do we say that there is a mitzvah of Yibum when there is at least the possibility of the Bechor being Mekayimet? But if there is no Bechor, then nobody does Yibum. Maybe that's what it means. So if there's a sense of responsibility in this family, in which there is a Bechor. Now, this is a common kind of thing. We have the idea of the Godol Shebabayit. It's sort of like a continuation of the previous generation, in which the oldest brother, in the Torah, the oldest brother, not a function of oldest, but rather this new idea of Bechor. So then maybe that's what it's saying. When we have that kind of family that has a presence of a Bechor, then there is the interrelated familial responsibility to take care of a dead brother. But if there isn't, so you don't have that tight-knit family structure that would be Mechayev Yibum at all. And then everything makes sense. Bechor means literally Bechor. Obviously, it's not limited to the Bechor's acting, okay, because of Eshetachim Shelo Yehi Be'olamo. So now it means anybody can act, but they can only act if there is a Bechor. If there's no Bechor, it's not the kind of family that does Yibum. So then Lo Tidkayim, it's not Yibum at all. No. Can't say that either. Because look back at the way that the Torah introduces the case. Ki yeshvu achim yachdav umeit echad mehem. Now, normally when you say one of them dies, so the implication is always, you remember, we always have minimalist implications, okay? So what the pasuk is saying is there were two brothers that were yeshvu yachdav, achim, one of the two brother dies. Now, if one of the two brother dies, so then it's also talking about a case where the older of the two brothers, and since there's only two, he's the Bechor. So mi lo askina the mit Bechor. And it says over here, the remaining brother, the single brother that remains, is his kid brother. It says, liabem katan, let the kid brother do it. So obviously if the Bechor died, then there's no Bechor to be Mekayim the Yibum. So it can't be dependent on the Bechor. I don't know. I mean, what right do you have to say that? Maybe it's true. There were two brothers. One died, v'hayah ha-bechor, meaning only if it was that the younger one died. But if the bechor died, so then eino chinami, I'm still right. You can't say that because there's got to be more than that case, because we're talking about the miyat rachmana eshet achiv shelo hayah ba'olamo. If the mitzvah would only be nogea if there are two brothers and the younger one dies, so then what would be the meaning of talking about the other brother? I mean, what we said over here, there are only two brothers. So then what are we talking about? Ki Yeshua Achim Yachdav? What do you mean Yeshua Achim Yachdav? The case is there were only two brothers. There's no need for a Yachdav in that case. So if the only mitzvah is on the Bechor, so we're back to what we said before. If there's an Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo, so it must be that it applies even when the Bechor died, so that the younger brother has to be doing Yibum, comes along the pasuk to say. But if that younger brother was born after the death of the Bechor, then there is no mitzvah Yibum. That makes perfectly good sense. Okay, so we're back again. The mitzvah has to apply even without a surviving Bechor, and therefore we don't understand the word Bechor meaning literally, because we've just seen that Meit Echad Mehem would be either one. So then what does it mean? It could only mean the oldest. So whoever is currently the oldest brother, the mitzvah is on him. Wait a minute. What you've proven to me is that there's a mitzvah of Yibam even where there's no Bechor. I understand. But There's still a question that I have on the way you've understood this, because I could still say that if there is no Bechor, and only if there's no Bechor, then we say that if a younger brother went ahead and did the Yibum, it's his. So he gets all of these things. But what about if there is a Bechor? Maybe if there is a Bechor, then only the Bechor can do Yibum. Because, I mean, what was the marker that we had? Umeit Echad Mehem, which includes the Bechor. So if the Bechor died. But maybe that's the only time that we say that anybody can do Yibum, where the Meit Echad Mehem was the Bechor. But maybe if the Bechor is here, then we should go according to the simple meaning of the Pasuk and say, well, no, then the Bechor and only the Bechor should do Yibum. Says the Gemara, Omar Kro, you know what? We should have said this in the beginning. Omar Kro ki yeshvu achim yachdav. And that means they're all the same. Huksha yeshivat achim zelazeh. We're specifically setting things up in such a way that all brothers have this interrelated responsibility. In which case, we have to understand the Vayah Bechor, the way we explained it, and it means Dafka, that we would like the oldest surviving brother, and if not him, then it's the one after him, and so on, to do the mitzvah. Says the Gemara, I still have a question, okay? Not ready to let go so quick. Because I could still say that if there is a Bechor, then it means we are going to force, we'll go back to the Bechor if nobody else does it. Deal. But how about if there is no Bechor, so then do not go back to the Godal. Could only go back to a Bechor. I understand that there's a remez over the oldest brother and that he should do if possible. But it's not a special halacha that he must do. We're only going to do a kviya in Beidin of the Bechor. We're not going to say, well, listen, you know, the younger brothers didn't want to do it. We're coming back to the oldest surviving brother. The oldest surviving brother say, why me? It says, Achim Yachdav. That means we're all the same. So, I mean, be consistent. If we're all the same, go to my kid brother, you know. I've got 13 kids to support. I can't deal with this. He's not even married, for God's sake. Give him this deal. Great deal for him. I mean, why can't we say that? So, why then is the halacha that Abaye Kashisha, now Abaye Kashisha obviously does not refer to the Abaye that we know, because he sure is not Kashisha, since he died very young, being from the family of Eli. But Abaye Kashisha is a much earlier Amira, and he said in a this Braita that he quoted, Mitzvah begadoli yabe, lo ratza, hochim etzel achiv hakatan. We keep going down. But if we then don't get anybody respond, lo ratzach hozrin etzel gadol. So maybe we don't. How do you know? Maybe we should only be chozrin etzel bechor. Answers the Gemara, because the oldest brother is here the one that is defined as the bechor, right? That's where he's getting his chashivas for to be magdim at all. So you have to be consistent. He's like the bechor. If we said, the bechor bechorato gormalo, you're ready to agree. Well, if he's in the status of a Bechor, then we understand that this is the kind of family that has that structure, that there's someone that's going to take responsibility. But now you're saying that that word Bechor includes the Gadol. So then that's the same idea. Just like the Bechor, you were ready to admit that it's the special status of Bechorah that defines it. So now that we're referring to Bechor as Gadol, so then the Gadol, it's the Gedulato. That causes him to have special status. Okay, but I got one more question. I mean, look, you're dealing with me very well, but I still don't understand. Maybe if the Bechor does the Yibum, then V'haya Bechor asher will be Yokum Hashem Achiv Ames L'Nachala. But if he's not a literal Bechor, then he doesn't get the Nachala. Maybe that part is still Lefi the Pshat. The Pshat is Bechor. So if that's the case, Kimi Yabim Bechor, let him be Noitel the Nachala. But Kimi Yabim Pashut, then he doesn't get the Nachala. In other words, is it so strange to say that a new din of Nachala is part of the din of a Bechor in Nachala? Because realize what we're saying, essentially. We're saying that this brother who is going to do the Yibum becomes a Bechor. because he gets a double portion. He's going to get his own portion in his father's Yerusha, and he's going to get his deceased brother's portion in his father's Yerusha. So then why not say, okay, the two things go together. If he's a Bechor in terms of the din of the Yerusha, then he becomes a Bechor here in terms of the Yerusha of his brother. But if he's not a Bechor, so then this part doesn't apply. There's just the remez that the Gadol should do the Yibum, but not that he should become the one who is Oymed al Shem Achiv. So therefore, Kimiyah ben Pashut, maybe he doesn't get the Nachala. Couldn't we at least be Mekayim, the simple meaning of the Pasuk, on that level? No, says the Gemara, because it says, Yakum al Shem Achiv. You can't separate out the two words. V'haya ha-Bechor, Yakum al Shem Achiv. If this is the guy who is the Bechor, then when you do the Yibum, that's what you've done. Why are we calling the Nachala Yakum al Shem Achiv? Because he's taken his brother's place. Varekam, that's exactly what this guy did. This Katan, who, I say Katan, the younger brother, who did the act of Yibum, is going to be Yakum al Shem Achiv in terms of Nachala as well. That's the double meaning of the Yakum. Stand up and do your duty. So you'll be the one who's Miyame. But it also means you will remain standing in place of the deceased brother, which is the Yerusha. You can't have it both ways. Okay, so then I don't understand. You're telling me that ultimately there is no meaning to the word Bechor. I mean, I've looked for every possible way that we could be Mekayim, the simple meaning of the word Bechor, and still have the Pasuk allow the Yibum of a younger brother, right? I've done a darn good job. I mean, I admit you've done a darn good job in showing that I'm wrong at every step, but then I'd still come back and ask you, so then what's the point? I mean, if you don't mean Bechor, then don't say Bechor. What's the point of calling it a Bechor? That's what we say, Ve'ela, okay, so now I can't find any excuse. So then Bechor de Karya Rachmana, why did the Torah even call him a Bechor if that's not what he is? Lama, says the Gemara, because of this beautiful idea, you see, the Bechor defines a concept of a double Nachala, doesn't he? That's what a double Nachala always means. It's a standard Yerusha. So when we get a Yibum, the person who does the Yibum becomes a Bechor. In what sense? Well, how do we define the Nachala of a Bechor? Do we say, okay, this guy basically gets two shares of the estate, so that if there were two brothers, we now split it into three. He gets the two-thirds, the other brother gets one-third, right? Okay, that's the normal din of Bechora. What happens? Is it a din in the estate, really? What happens when new money comes into the estate? How can new money come into the estate? Many ways. We'll talk about that when we get to the main dinim, but you could have Shevach Nechasim. You could have an additional Yerusha that falls to the estate from a long-lost cousin that doesn't have any other connections except the deceased father. So then does the Bechor end up with a double portion in that as well? No, he does not. Therefore, by calling him a Bechor, we're saying, by the way, the dinim of the Yerusha to other cases where there's a double portion, that is, a Bechor, are applicable to this case as well. An amazing Kiddush. And therefore, if new money comes into the estate, he does not share it as if he is the brother. So don't make the mistake of thinking he really is the brother. He's not really the brother. We're giving him a din of a Bechor. Brilliant. And therefore, the calling him a Bechor makes things worse for him. Ligriuta. Because it's a deterioration of the simple meaning of the state of Bechor. Because it's telling us, just like a Bechor, he doesn't get a double portion in things that are only prospective issues. They're not currently owned by the father at the moment of his death. They're part of the estate. The relationship of the Bechor is to the father, not to the estate. A profound idea. And therefore, here too, the relationship of this new Bechora is to the father only and not to the estate. Or if you learn like the other Rishonim, that it does not define the father, then it's to the brother only and not to the estate of the brother. Fine. Beautiful. Ah, come on, guys. This is great. So, Afhai, in and out of Baroi Kibimuchzak. Excellent. And now we have this special moment of our dear Capitan. And hot on his heels is his replacement, so he better do a good job. Yep, I see him right there. Uh-oh, he's coming around on Zoom. Now, we brought up a sugya. And that sugya had to do with going ahead and marrying someone that you weren't allowed to marry, but we don't subsequently insist that you divorce. So we had that Bedogea, the Kohen, who married the Chalitza over here, the Chalutza, where it wasn't clear who the Chalutza was. And we had that in the case of the Achot Skukato, where subsequently the brother took off the Zika. Now, there are other reasons for us to force divorce. And that was one of the things that we introduced this sugya with, is why do we force divorce in the case of the four brothers, two of whom were married to two sisters, and they became Aser Zachot Skukato, as opposed to the case where you had the two brothers and we didn't know which one was married to whom. And we explained the difference that one is a permanent state of Achot Skukato, and one was a case of we didn't know who, and when we went ahead and did the Chalitza, we removed the Achot Skukato, and so on. Now, there are interesting similar cases where the original reason to encourage divorce may not be applicable. The question is whether the Beis Din gets involved. Now, these are cases where there might be an iser of marriage because of its inappropriateness, as opposed to the iser of marriage because the Rabbanan actually created an iser. Okay. What would those cases be? How would we get a case where it's inappropriate? Well, it's inappropriate if it's scandalous. Scandalous? That's a reason. Yes, scandalous. Let's talk about the cases. Somebody has been the object of these constant rumors that he's been carrying on a relationship with a shivcha. And now that shivcha ends up being set free by her owner. And now he wants to marry her. Or maybe there's rumors that this guy's been fooling around with this non-Jewish girl, and then she becomes a gioret. Mm-hmm. Now he wants to marry her. So in both of these cases, he's not allowed to marry her because, as we'll see, if he does, so then he's substantiating what it was that people were saying. Why is that a problem? We'll see. Ve'im kanas, if he does go ahead and marry her, then we don't insist that they get divorced. Now, one of the most important implications of this is the case of the Goya, because you could say, well, wait a minute. If Lamaisa, the reason that he shouldn't get married to her is because she only became a Gioret in order to marry him, isn't that a pagam in the Gior? So then she still remains a Goya. But you see from here, that doesn't bother us because we allow them to remain married, as we'll see. So that seems to prove that even where a Geirut was done for the purpose of marrying a Jew, that it would still be a kosher Geirut. It's very important to contemporary implications. So, therefore, Im Kanas in Motzin Miado may have serious implications of halacha in general. Another question, however, is what if there were rumors about a guy who was carrying on with a married woman? So there, if Anitana Leshet Ish, and they, meaning the Beis Din, was motzi, because of that we forced the husband to divorce his wife because we know that they actually, there had been adultery there, and therefore the Torah asserted, remember, it says Venitma twice in the Parsha of Soita. One is to tell me she's a surah to the Baal, and one to tell me that she's a surah to the Boel. So over there, Afa Pisha Kanas, even if this guy who we suspect of adultery, he took her, he has to divorce her. Because wherever the woman is asura to her husband, she is also asura to the guy who made her asura to the husband. And that we learn out in the Parsha of Seita, v'nitma'ah, echad leba'al, ve'echad leboel. All right, so now I'm just interested in the part. I mean, but aren't you saying over here that a goya that became Jewish in order to marry a Jewish guy is still considered to be a kosher giyoret, because you're saying they can continue to be married. So obviously they are married, right? So that means that echad ish shenitgayer l'shum isha, or echad isha shenitgayra l'shum ish, or maybe somebody who is mitgayer l'shem shulchan melachim. I mean, maybe it's like the years at which the Klal Yisrael was so rich, and there was malchus, and there was money, and there was covet in being a Jew, and that would mean somebody became a Jew in those days. I mean, do we believe that they wanted to share the fate of being a Jew, or do we believe they wanted to share the fatefulness of being a Jew? I mean, that's, you know, it should be osur and not a kosher geiros. And it says over there, for those purposes, or l'shum, I'm sorry, I forgot to say this is all part of the brisa, or l'shum avdei Shlomo. We already saw the avdei Shlomo were very powerful because Shlomo HaMelech had made them part of the important officials. These are not considered to be geirim. Divrei Rabbi Meir, Divrei Rabbi Nechemia. Because Rabbi Nechemia's shita was, I don't care what the ulterior motivation is. They could be geirei arayot, which was, of course, the case of the kutim. The lions were eating them, and they decided it's because the god of the land is angry at them because they don't know how to be Jewish. They're going to become Jewish because they're tired of being the lion's food. Okay, a valid reason for Geirut, but no reason to look at it as they're being interested in relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
The prey decided to pray.
A weak one by now, but all right. So that is not considered to be Geirut. How about a Ger who is a Ger because of dreams? Yes, he keeps getting these dreams. Either become Jewish or you die. But I don't want to become Jewish or you die. All right, so the guy finally goes in and becomes Jewish, you know? That doesn't work. How about V'rabim me'ameya aretz mityahadim with the Mordechai and Esther, you know? They're too scared of the Jews. None of these people are really gerim, a non-gerim, because it's for other purposes. They need to be a ger bizman hazeh. So since anybody becomes Jewish, Rizman Hazeh is certifiably insane. The only reason that he would become a ger was because it's got to be that this is the only life that he can imagine for himself, which is to be a member of Yisrael. So if that's the case, he's obviously a kosher ger. What ulterior motive could anyone ever have? Wait a minute, you can't mean that only Bizman Hazeh, I mean, none of the Gerim that we're talking about throughout history were ever Gerim? I mean, come on, we've got some seriously important Gerim over here. Now you're saying it's Bizman Hazeh, so now we're cutting out Nevuzdradan and then the Sisra business and the Haman's children, all of that. None of that was true. They weren't really Gerim. No, I mean like today, Kibizman Hazeh. So in the way that somebody would become a Ger today, that would be good. But that's the Braita, and the Mishnah says otherwise. The Mishnah says they don't have to get divorced, even though we certainly have strong grounds to believe that the only reason they became a ger was in order to marry this guy. So how do we explain this? Which way does it go? Says the Gemara, well, remember, this is not the end of the story with this Braita. Because didn't we learn about that brisa that Omer Yisrael Bashmu Bamarta Bishmei to Rav, that the halacha is, according to the Mandi Omar, who argues on this brisa that we said is Bedafka, going the way that Rabbi Nechemia learned, and it was actually the halacha is Kedivrei Omer Kulam Gerimim, that actually there is a shita that argues with him, that the Tanoim, and holds that they are Gerei Emet. And if that's the case, she really is a ger. By the way, there's just an interesting aside, which is, I mean, how does this work with the whole idea of the kutim being gerei arayot? So, I mean, memanav shach. I mean, if they really were gerei arayot, then they're not kosher. And so how does somebody say gerei arayotain? And as if they're not kosher now, if the halacha is that even gerei arayot are kosher, I mean, it seems to go against the entire structure of the Gemara here. So Tosis explains that the case of the Kutim and those Gerei Arayot is unique because of the fact that the Kutim were subsequently found to be worshipping Avodah Zarah, and therefore they cast doubt on the entire Tahalich, of they're really willing to be fundamentally Bnei Yisrael in terms of accepting Malchus Shamayim. Okay, so then, so what about the Mandi Omer Hotzer Geri Emes? I mean, the fact is they were worshiping Avodah Zarah the whole time. So Tosfos suggests that, according to him, they did a second Geras in order to validate their Geras. Okay, anyway, but that's a very fascinating aside. But we can nonetheless, we can go on and understand our sugya. So, oops, my screen again. All right, so therefore, the halacha is like the Rabbanan. So then Ihachi has to Gemara, but wait a second. If that's the halacha, then why are we making this big deal about don't marry her? Why don't marry her? Is she a Giyaret or is she not a Giyaret? So why can't you marry her? I don't understand. No. The reason you can't marry her is not because of a problem in the Gerut. You took my mind off the whole structure over here. It's not that the problem of the Gerut was the reason you don't marry. You don't marry because of a completely different halacha, namely of Rav Asi. And that is because the Amar Rav Asi, Haser Mimcha Ikshut Pevela Zutzvatai. The Pusik says, this is Shlomo HaMelech's advice, get out of the mouth of people. They're talking about you, then don't do something to get them to talk about you more. See? We said he was carrying on with her. See? Now he went in and he got married to her. So don't do that because of that halacha. Wait a minute. Isn't there a general halacha that has a much bigger mekor than Shlomo HaMelech Saser Mimcha? How about the din of Vayitem Nikiim Melechim Yisrael, right? Isn't that, that's like a deoraisa. We talk about in terms of Bnei God, Uvnei Ruvain, and there's lots of other. I mean, that's the pasuk that is brought on the in the Yerushalmi, and there, over there, there's a lot of other psukim also that are brought. And it goes through over there, mina Torah, mina Ksuvim, mina Neviim, mina Ksuvim, and the best of them, Chuvar Shebekulam, is Vayisim Nekiim. So what is this idea of the Haser Mimcha that is seems to not hold of Hayisim Nekiim? So why are we bringing this as this new idea? So actually, it's interesting that the Rishonim explained that there really are two different halachas. Namely, this guy really was playing around with this Goyish girl, right? So when he's saying, just apply to him, Vehayitem Nekiim, what do you think that pasuk is saying? Pretend to be Naki. Don't let people know the truth? I mean, why am I hiding the fact that I'm not Naki? Vayitem Nikiim me Hashem umi Yisrael does not mean be a phony. So therefore, there's got to be another halacha. The other halacha is, even if it's true, like in this case, don't give them more of an opportunity to be talking about you, even though there's not more that you're doing. And therefore, to be married to her is bad because of Rabbi Yossi. But it has nothing to do with this halacha. It's because of not the gerus, but because of what it implies. Tana Rabbana. Ein mekablim gerim liyamot HaMashiach. You're not mekabel gerim during Yamot HaMashiach. And in the same way that that's true during the days of David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech, they did not accept gerim because there was always a sense of, well, it doesn't prove anything that they say they want to be Bnei Yisrael. They just want to be rich, or they want to be a member of the most powerful country. Everybody wants to be an American after all. The streets are paved with gold. So what does that have to do with anything? It's just because of the movies from L.A. and Hollywood. So the same thing was true then. So therefore, we cannot be mekabel those gerim. Although, again, the Mefarshim point out, I mean, we have tons of examples of gerim from that period, actually, that appear in Tanakh and so on, or the number of gerim that were mitotzaf when David HaMelech was so makbid on the bizoyan of the Givonim and so on and so forth. So again, there were cases where the people that became gerim were themselves extremely powerful and rich, and therefore, why would we attribute it to the fact that they want to be part of the chashivas of Yisrael? Or it's talking about they became gerim in the sense that they made themselves gerim. Like Amei Haaretz or Mit Yahadim. It doesn't mean that they were accepted by Bezdin to be gerim and so on. Okay, so where do we see this beautiful pasuk? Mamish, an amazing pasuk. Omer, Reb Elezer, Maikra, Hein Gor Yagur, Efes Mioti. Somebody wants to be a ger, let him become a ger without me, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning, let him become a ger when I have been mastir my face. And he's becoming a ger in the toughest situations, where then he's ready to buy into what it is to be a Ben Yisrael. At a time of emunatcha balaylot. And then, if somebody does that, mi gar itach, somebody becomes a ger when you are alone, on your own as Yisrael, without any evidence that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with you, alayich yipol. When it comes to your ultimate destiny in the Mashiach and Olam Haba, then he'll be part of that. But he can't become part of it in advance, at the time. That's the point. Isn't that lovely? Okay. Getting on to the next case in the Mishnah. Rumors are flying that this guy has been making out with a married woman. So there we say that you have to, if the husband divorced her, so then even if the supposed Boel married her, he's going to have to divorce her. Now comes along Rav and says, yes, but that's only if there were witnesses that they were having a relationship. It's not just because he divorced her. So Rav Shesha says, I can tell you 100%. Rav is a very smart man. The only way he could have said something so stupid is if he was fast asleep when he was saying it. So he must have been falling asleep and was sort of babbling in his sleep, and that's why he said this. So Amina Kinayim Veshachiv Rav Amar Lahai Shmaitza. I mean, nobody could believe that. It's absurd. The Tanya. Now take a look at the Braisa. Hanita'ana Leshatish. So this guy is the object of all of these rumors. And because of it, the Beis Din was motzi, the wife. Now, we're going to see later on that this cannot be the right girsa. So trust me for a moment that it isn't the right girsa. And it doesn't say vahotzi uha, which would mean that Beis Din forced him to divorce. It would be vahotzi'a. The husband divorced her because he didn't like the rumors, but not that the Beis Din forced him to divorce. Okay? So he divorced her. And Vinit Garsha. And then she got married to somebody else. And then that guy divorces her. That in that case, if the supposed Boel marries her, there he doesn't have to divorce her. Why? Because since after her husband divorced her, the whole subject of the divorce was the supposed love affair with this guy, and then she goes and marries another guy. She doesn't even marry this guy. So that puts a stop to the rumors, because, like, you know, it doesn't sound very juicy anymore. Yeah, they carried on for years. We always knew it. Her husband finally divorced her. Oh, really? So now they live happily ever. No, she went and married another guy. Doesn't add up. Okay, so therefore, if he does, 10 years later, she gets divorced from the next guy, in that case, he can actually marry her. He doesn't have to divorce her. So, if they went ahead and marry, I should say she's allowed to marry. So now tell me what the case is, all right? Are we talking about that there were witnesses? If there were witnesses, it's an issue de raisa. So who cares whether she married somebody else? My avi. Elamai, it's talking about there were no witnesses. And the only reason that he doesn't have to divorce her is because the other guy came along and married her, and that stopped the rumors cold. So the time adat acher v'afseke l'kala. But if it wouldn't have been for that, despite the fact that there are no witnesses, Rav, are no witnesses, the deal would be that we would have forced them to get divorced without witnesses. Don't give me that. So you see from here, if you marry directly this woman, even though there are no witnesses, then if she was divorced because of your rumors, she's going to have to get divorced from you. No, says Rav. What's sleeping? You're sleeping. The meaning of the bright has nothing to do with what you're saying. The truth is that who had the Navagavdullah, it would have been exactly the same case. If there are no witnesses, then even if another marriage didn't put a stop to the rumors, I still would have said that the only time we force the guy to get divorced is in the event that there were actual witnesses. If there's no witnesses, we do not force a divorce. All the Brisa is saying is that even though she went and married somebody else, and even though there was an end to the rumors, he still should not marry her lechatchila. And only if he did marry her, that's the Kiddush, that he should still not marry her, because he's going to actually reflame the rumors of his old flame. And because of that, he should not remarry her. And therefore, l'chatchila lo yichnos, but as far as the bidyavad is concerned, that we don't make him get divorced, that's true, whether there was a stop to the rumors, there wasn't a stop to the rumors. Rumors are not a reason for divorce. Okay, that's what Rav claims. How about this brisa? What case do we say that they have to get divorced? That's only where there's no children from the original marriage. But if there's children from the original marriage, then do not force a divorce from her supposed adulterer. Because then people will say, aha. So Beis Din realizes that these people are not allowed to be married, which means that Beis Din knows what's been going on, which means that all those kids from that first marriage, who knows whose kids they are, really? And therefore, they're all probably mamzerim. That is not what you want to do, because then you're going to create a problem for the children, and they'll be called mamzerim. But if Adim come around, so then even if he's got bunim, I mean, it's Asur Midiraisa, she's going to have to get divorced. So you see from here that where there are no children, then you have to get divorced, even if there are no Adim. And Rav says you only have to get divorced is when there are Adim. No, Rav says that, yes, this is 100% true. But our Mishnah is talking about where there were children. That's why I said, says Rav, since our Mishnah is talking about that they're children, then the only time that we would say we forced them to get divorced is if there were witnesses. What? I mean, why would Rav be constrained to say that the Mishnah is talking about where there's children, and then he has to say, and therefore could only be talking about if there's witness? I would just take the Mishnah Kipshutai. There's no children. You have to get divorced. Doesn't matter whether there's Adam or not. I don't understand. So my duchke the Rav lukumi lamasisim b'yeshlo bonim, and therefore yeshlo Adam. And the only reason that the Mishnah works is because since there's Adam afkinan, but if there hadn't been Adam lomav, just take the case to be very simple. There's no children from the first marriage, and then there don't have to be Adim. Because, says Rava, Rav is way ahead of you, even though he's half asleep, okay? Let's cut out the half asleep jazz. Because he looked at the Mishnah, and he understood what you haven't begun to imagine. Why did the Mishnah say that the case was Hotzi Uha? Hotzi Uha means that Beis Din forced a divorce. Here's where you see that the original language of Hotzi Uha in the previous mentioned Braita is a mistake. It said over there, Hotzi'a, not Hotzi Uha. So over here, the idea is that, says Rav, the reason, should have just said Hotzi'a. Ella, the point is, when it says Hotzi Uha, it means by Beis Din. But Beis Din will never be motzi a woman unless they have Adim. So since the Mishnah demands Adim, that's what Rav is saying. Since the Mishnah demands Adim before we carry out this enforced divorce, why would we do that if we know that the court was mechayevim? So why do we need Adam? Must be that there are children. And since there are children, then he would actually not be divorcing him, right? Okay. That's what we're going to have to say, says Rav. Or, I mean, I could actually explain the whole issue by saying that the brises that we brought about having children or about having another marriage in between, those are going according to Rebbe, but Rav doesn't agree with Rebbe. Because he agrees with the way that we just analyzed the sugya here. The Tanya, here we've got stories that Rebbe says, yeah, you get divorced even where you have suspicious circumstances that look very bad. The Avon man, that's the guy who's selling the perfume. Well, he comes in and he sells the perfume, but meanwhile, he perfumes things up a lot. And, you know, the salesman always calls twice, right? So the salesman is found. The husband comes back for a surprise visit to his beloved wife, and the Avon man is walking out of the house, and he walks in, and his wife is pulling on her underwear. Uh-oh, this guy says, this don't look good to me. So the Rochel is Yotze, and her woman is putting on her underpants. Well, says Rebbe, that don't look good. So holu b'chu ar hadavar, teitze. This is like pretty disgusting scene. And therefore, she should get divorced. Okay, so that's Rebbe Shita, that we can divorce without Aiden. Or suppose the Avon man is walking out of the house and the husband walks into the house and he's getting a little suspicious and examines the bed. And what does he find? Somebody sneezed. And yep, the snot's all over the top of the bed of the Kila, you know, it's a canopy bed, which means somebody's been lying on that bed facing up. Now, who's been lying facing up? I got it. So if that's the case, or the guy, the Avon man's walking out of the house and the husband finds shoes that are turned upside down underneath the bed. And obviously were turned upside down so that it would not be noticed that they were somebody's shoes, because only the soles are up. And in case hubby comes in fast and I got to make a quick exit and leave my shoes behind, he won't catch on right away and I can always sneak back. Anyway, I've got this all worked out, you understand. You want to figure out like the possibilities, just ask the Chachomim. They'll tell you all the different ways this guy is going to cover. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Okay,
what
so
this guy is.
Omar Rebbe, Hol Mechubar Hadavar, this is disgusting. She should be Yotzei. So you see that according to Rebbe, you get divorced even on the basis of a rumor. Okay, that's what the Braisa says. But Rav, he holds, we don't hold it that. So therefore, it must be, it's only in the case of Edim, and therefore, it must be that we're talking about with Edim. Why did the Mishnah say case of Edim? Must be because there were kids. Well, I don't, this business about the shoes upside down, what is the Sherlock Holmes who refuses to get his hands dirty? Bend down, pick up the shoes, and see whose shoes they are. That's so ridiculous, isn't it? So why don't you look and see who belongs? Like, say, the Maninu, whose shoes are these? No, of course, it doesn't mean you actually find the shoes. Of course not. But what I can see is that there was a place under the bed, which was his wife hadn't actually swept under the bed in ages, which is one of the reasons all of this is going on. Anyway, but you can see in all of that dirt under the bed that somebody had twisted the shoes around. That was in case of a quick getaway. That's the point. So the makom amin alima arfuchim tachat amita, therefore, says Rebbe, not nice. Olum b'chuar ha'davar, so therefore, teitzei.